Just out of interest, how many people in the room here are already a SharePoint developer? Old school SharePoint developer, solution packages? Anybody SharePoint 2003 hacking away at dodgy files? Yeah, we can be proud of that. Those days are long gone now. I was talking to someone actually on the taxi on the way here this morning. He's migrating a large 2003 environment all the way over to 2013 and having to unbend all those things that were hacked away at in the out-of-the-box system files in 2003 to get it to do things that are there naturally out of the box in 2013. Has anyone here, I'm hoping a few of you guys have attended the SharePoint 2013 sessions around apps in the last 2 days, Israel Vegas and Sean's. The intention of this session is it complements that. One of the feedback we got from the TechEd North America was is there was quite a bit of overlap in the app sessions. So I've purposely left some of the fundamentals out here. So, okay, we'll get started. So today we're going to be talking a lot about essentially building apps for SharePoint and some of the tips around if you're looking to start building apps, whether it's for internal applications or whether it's for applications you want to release to the store and try and make your fortune and retire from IT altogether. Hopefully the tips will help you in both those scenarios. My name is Jeremy Thake. My clicker's going to stop working. And I have been an MVP now for 3 years. I'm just coming up, hopefully, for a renewal. I'm a chief architect at AvPoint Inc., which is a large software vendor. So if you're interested in AvPoint products and you're working with SharePoint, please come by and say hello to the booth at the staff we have there. And as you can probably tell from my accent, usually I say I'm not the one with the accent you guys are. And it kind of works in Europe. I was born in London, but I spent 8 years in Australia, so I have a little bit of an Aussie twang going. And I moved to New York 2.5 years ago, so now I'm kind of getting the Americanisms in there as well. I also helped co-found a website called nothingbutsharepoint.com, which is a community site focused around SharePoint. So another one you can add to your list if it isn't on your list already. And the reason I've got an interest in apps right now is we've released both AvPoint Meetings and Task and Calendar Sync into the store recently. Meetings in April and Task and Calendar Sync back in June last year when the preview was out for 2013. So I've been working with apps for a long time. So this is really my architectural and dev experience around gotchas and little things you have to kind of cater for when you're thinking about building apps inside SharePoint. If you have any questions after this session, you can always come and see me at the booth. Or please feel free to email me at jeremy.thake@avpoint.com, and I'll always be blogging at jeremythake.com, so please check out that blog. I'm doing a lot around social and apps right now. So the idea is this session is going to really complement the other app sessions that have been going around this week, and there are some more tomorrow that kind of add the complement to this as well. And to really understand some of the reasons why you would build apps over maybe solution packages, especially if you're on-premises where you do have the option to still do full trust solution packages over apps. And really just to lean on my experience of actually releasing three apps into the SharePoint store. So essentially, these slides are the Microsoft marketing slides. I'm sure you've probably seen these before, but I wanted to give my take on this. What you can see from the app model is this evolution of the way that Microsoft think, whether it's Windows Phone 8, whether it's Windows 8, whether it's Office, whether it's SharePoint. There's this concept of an app and a store. And there's some real benefits, not just to consumers in Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, but also in enterprises and organizations in this ability to obtain apps or solutions to put inside their SharePoint environment or their Office client environment via a mechanism of either purchasing it directly from the store, or in our case, our apps are actually free, and you can download them without any of that commercial side and trial these apps in a lot easier way than what you would do in a traditional software model where you kind of grab them and download them and have to kind of go through some form of customization. So the deployment and the reach is a lot easier. I guess from an app model perspective, they did a survey last year, and they found there was about 700,000 SharePoint developers out there doing full trust solutions. But obviously, there's a lot more developers in the marketplace. There's a lot here today that probably have never written on SharePoint before, or to be honest, probably have avoided it because of the complexities of how you build full trust solutions within SharePoint, where you need to carry around a gigantic laptop, running SharePoint and running AD and running SQL, and developers who build ASP.NET solutions don't need all that cumbersome overhead. Also, typically, those developers want to write in HTML5 and CSS. I know they're probably attending TechEd this week, but they're probably also watching all the build sessions as well to see all the new latest and greatest technology that the likes of Scott Hanselman and those guys are releasing in the ASP.NET team. And in the past, as a SharePoint guy in the development space, you couldn't use any of that cool new stuff because you were tied to that full trust model. And especially in kind of 2007, it was a whole .NET framework away from what your guys next to you that were writing ASP.NET code could be doing at the same time. So the SharePoint devs had a real tough time of it. And also this concept of, and I'm sure everyone's been there, you build a solution, you deploy it, and you go, SharePoint is slow, when it's not really SharePoint. It's the way that people have done customizations in their environment. And so how SharePoint solutions can leverage this cloud to get around some of the scalability issues that people faced when they were building customizations on SharePoint 2010 or SharePoint 2007. So what's happened is they've introduced this app model. And so for us internally at AvPoint, it's been a great way, one, for our products to be available in the store and reach people that we may never reach elsewhere, because there's people in Office 365 right now viewing that store and trying our products without us having to reach them and talk to them directly and try and convince them to install our product. So that concept of reach is very, very good from a software vendor. But from a consumer inside an organization, it's also very good, because I can now build a solution and provide it to my business, and they can choose to add that app into their team site or their my site or wherever they choose to deploy it. But the nice bit is we could do that kind of in 2010 and in 2007 with solution packages, but it was really a feature-orientated thing. You had to ask the users to activate features, and there was no real way of constraining who could and who couldn't see those features. It was either hidden completely or it was shown to everyone to activate. As long as they had the permissions to activate a feature, they could light that up. And I can bet you any money whatsoever that you've had an end user find a site collection feature that was meant for one particular department that you'd build a solution for that's activated in their site collection when they shouldn't have done. So this app model allows me to build an app, drop it in my app catalog, and decide from a security side who can and cannot see those apps. So it's a really nice way to kind of deploy your things with audiences in mind. And we've never really had the ability to do that in the past when it came to SharePoint development. The tooling obviously has got a lot better now. So this familiar tool set concept of I can now build my SharePoint solution, and sorry, the words solution package and solution can get a little bit confusing, but my SharePoint business solution, not just in ASP.NET anymore. I can write in HTML5 with JavaScript. I could write in Ruby on Rails, PHP if I really chose to. Any platform that you have a developer in, I can build that web application and host it, and then it can look and feel like SharePoint. And some of the demonstrations I'll show today hopefully allow you to understand this benefit now that I don't necessarily have to be going out and finding a SharePoint dev. I can go out there and find other developers with experience in web development, give them a little bit of training around, here are the hooks to make it look and feel like SharePoint. Here is the API to go and fiddle with the document libraries and things, and I'll show you some of that today, and they're up and running. It also means from an application lifecycle management perspective, and I've done a fair few talks which are on my blog around this, really does improve that, because now I can start building in things like ASP.NET MVC, I can do unit testing, integration testing, I can do web testing, completely in isolation of SharePoint. That has been always a tough thing to do from a SharePoint perspective. So that concept of this app model is definitely a big drive for us. And I believe there's still instances where it might be necessary to do full trust solutions, and I'll introduce that now. So from an app perspective, you've probably seen the official Microsoft diagrams, but I have an animation that I've been using just to kind of get over the concepts in a different approach, so just bear with me. There are three types of apps you can deploy. The first is the SharePoint-hosted app, and that's a little bit like a sandbox solution in the sense that when you add the app from either the store or from the app catalog, it gets deployed as an app web, which is a special type of SharePoint SP web or site if you're on the business user side that gets deployed into that root site collection. Everything is self-contained. The major difference between that and a sandbox solution is that you cannot deploy in that app package any managed code whatsoever. Everything has to be client-side JavaScript on the pages. I can create lists and libraries. I can deploy pages and JavaScript files and images. But I can't have any managed code, C# or VB.NET, and deploy it with that app package. Why? Because Microsoft don't want you executing code on their servers anymore. Why? Because they're very interested in running a multi-tenant Office 365 environment that scales. And they don't want bad developers writing bad code, deploying it to a multi-tenant environment and bringing down the entire SharePoint farm. So they've made this decision that any managed code needs to be written outside. So the way they do that is there's two approaches. There's the Azure-hosted approach, sometimes called the auto-hosted approach. And what that does is, as well as having this SharePoint-hosted concept where you get an SP web, app web, inside that there, and you can see that's app 2, you also get this other component. And that component actually deploys into Azure. And it automatically deploys a web role and also an optional SQL role. What that means is, rather than maybe storing my business data inside SharePoint lists, which is what, as a SharePoint developer, we would traditionally do, if it's very highly relational, it's very, very at scale, and you're doing very complicated queries, you might be better storing that in SQL. So in this example now, I can actually deploy that app, deploy a schema inside SQL, and use that storage for my app, as opposed to using SharePoint lists. So we've got a little bit of flexibility there. Now, note here, auto-hosted or Azure-hosted apps are only supported by Office 365. They are not supported by on-premises environments. They also, if you build, and we've got burnt on this, unfortunately right now, those apps in the store cannot be auto-hosted. Auto-hosted support for apps in the store is coming, but it's currently not supported. But if you sideload an auto-hosted app, i.e. put it in your app catalog, and don't acquire it from the store, you can use auto-hosted apps right now. So it will automatically push out another web role and a SQL role that you could, that web role, the app2 web, that could be anything, PHP, it could be Ruby, whatever you want it to be. And then the third one, which is the one we use for all of our applications, is the provider-hosted model. Now, the provider-hosted model doesn't automatically go and provision web role and a SQL role for every time someone installs the app. This is called a multi-tenant environment, where if I went in my Office 365 tenancy and added my app, it would point to this instance. But if you guys all went and downloaded AvPoint Meetings right now, it would also point to that web role. So it's a multi-tenant solution. Whereas the auto-hosted would mean that if you guys all individually added the AvPoint Meetings app, it would go and provision an instance of the web role and an instance of the SQL role just for you alone. So it's a tenant-centric model. But unfortunately, in the store, they're not quite there yet with it. What the provider-hosted model allows me to do, though, is, for instance, for our AvPoint task and calendar sync, we actually have a timer service in the background. And that timer service, we can have hosted there. And I'll talk a little bit more about OAuth later in how we leverage that timer service and wake up, do some stuff, and then go back to sleep again. And so the provider-hosted model is the only way we could tackle the task and calendar sync app. So they're the main approaches here. But then the other key is that with the App 3 or the AvPoint Meetings app, we can actually deploy that in a sub-site. We could deploy it in a different site collection. That's its own app web. And that will be able to then click on it and jump over to that multi-tenant environment on the right. Now, where things get a little bit more complicated is if we wanted to kind of deploy another service there for App 4, that would be completely separate. So if I deployed App 4 into a sub-site, we can see now that we can run that in Azure. So it's hard to see on these colors, unfortunately, the guys, when they reskin this mucked around my color palette. But you can see the differences there that App 4 is running in the cloud in Azure, whereas I could run those bits in App 3 there in an on-premises server farm and have a firewall in front of it. And on-premises supports provider-hosted, and so does Office 365 environments. So they're the most common. The big catch with provider-hosted is you cannot use the same app package for both online, as in Office 365 SharePoint Online, and SharePoint on-premises. You actually have to generate different packages. And the reason for that is that SharePoint Online leverages OAuth, which is managed by access control services inside Azure. Whereas on-premises, there's no concept of OAuth. So you have to use a different approach, which is the full trust approach, or for any exchange people in the room, S2S, server-to-server trust. So you do have to create different packages for both online and on-premise people. And so, for instance, for us with the AvePoint Meetings app, we have an on-premises app package and an online one, and we distribute the on-premises one in a different different mechanism. So the model has evolved. We started off with 2007, where all of the managed code was running on the farm server itself. And then we evolved a little bit. We introduced this concept of a sandbox, where we could run some code inside SharePoint, but it was monitored. And if it did bad things, we would cut it off so it wouldn't impact the farm. They also introduced the client-side object model, which meant that from my phone or from a web browser or maybe even Windows 8, I could call into SharePoint as long as I had the credentials and access data inside SharePoint, libraries, lists, etc. With 2013 now, they have significantly improved the API. It's got a bigger surface. I can get things from the user profile service, the business connectivity services. I can get things from search and Excel services. That wasn't available in 2010. So it means you can build a lot more sophisticated applications on various different platforms. And the main reason they did this is the app model relies on that client-side object model. There is no concept of a server-side object model in the app model because nothing is executed on the server. So they had to try and get closer parity between what you could do in server-side and what you can do on client-side. There are still some gaps, and I'll cover some of those. So obviously in the past, we've had this concept of a full trust solution. It allows me to deploy true customizations into the GAC and also into the SharePoint Hive folder, whether it be the 14 Hive or the 15 Hive. The sandbox solutions was introduced into 2010 and did still allow me to do managed code, and it allowed me to deploy into Office 365 or in on-premises. But that's actually been deprecated in 2013. Now, what does Microsoft mean by deprecated with the sandbox solution? Well, if you look at history in terms of deprecation with the SharePoint team, typically that means the next major release, it's not going to get any love whatsoever. It may not even be supported. They haven't announced that yet, but you have to read between the lines. In a lot of other instances where something like that has happened, it hasn't even been in the product. I'm already seeing a lot of people, a lot of large customers fighting against that, because if you think 3 years ago, Microsoft were pushing, write sandbox solutions, don't write full trust solutions. So a lot of investment went into sandbox solutions. So I personally think they'll probably continue the support, but they're not going to improve the tooling for how you build sandbox solutions or add anything extra to it. All of the focus for Microsoft is going to be enhancing this new app model and making it better. So from a SharePoint apps perspective, this is brand new as of 2013. Out of interest, how many people here are on Office 365 with SharePoint? So most of you are on-premises customers. How many are you on 2013? Okay, so probably 5% of the room. 2010? Yeah, that's probably 60%. And the rest, 2007? Any 2003s in the room? Okay, we've got three 2003s. Okay. So this is really new for you guys. You're going to have to go back and completely convince your bosses you need to upgrade. So there is a licensing mechanism within these apps. Now, obviously, if you're building for your own organization, you might not have a concept of licensing. But if you're built like us, like a vendor, and you're selling software, you may want to consider leveraging their licensing mechanisms and the store commercial process. Now, when we talk about SharePoint Online and on-premise, and because there wasn't so many hands go up, I won't go too much in detail on this one. But with a full trust solution, I can do server-side, I can do client-side, but there is no marketplace. There's no concept of a store or an app catalog. This goes back to if I deploy that solution onto a farm, those features, as long as they're visible, are going to be visible to everybody that can activate a feature. Full trust solutions only work on-premises. So if your company has a cloud vision, you need to start thinking about maybe not continuing full trust solutions. There is no concept of OAuth, and we get through some examples of that later. But you do get deep user interface integration with it. And you'll see with some of the other integrations, it doesn't look like SharePoint immediately, but I'll show you some tips around that. Sandbox solutions is you can use a server-side object model, but it's limited. You can't elevate permissions and do stuff at a farm level. You can only be within the site collection where your sandbox solution is deployed. So that can be a little bit limiting. You can use the client object model as well. There's no marketplace with sandbox solutions. They will work both online and on-premise. And there's no OAuth available with sandbox solutions as well. And the UI integration is strong there. Apps only has client-side object model. You cannot use server-side, as I've mentioned. It does have a marketplace, does work in both places. You do get the OAuth, but there are some restrictions on how integrated it can feel. So just quickly from from our app's perspective, I'm just going to jump in and discuss this why we built this app. We found it very, very hard to track meetings within our own organization, and we saw that everyone was using OneNote, and people were using different structures and weren't able to kind of assign actions to other people. It's very easy for me to assign an action in OneNote to myself, but it's not easy to assign other people. People are using OneNote, but they're doing it more from a personal perspective rather than a shared team note-taking. And also, with 2013, the meeting workspaces were deprecated. But to be honest, although there's no migration story between 2010 and 2013, there was a lot of bad feedback about meeting workspaces and how flexible they were to use. So we decided to build a way to plan meetings. We decided to build a way that everyone in this room could log into the meetings app right now and log their meetings. And we also wanted the ability to see all the actions that were kind of peeling out of those meetings and leverage some of the out-of-the-box SharePoint tricks. So we took the view that you can have as many users using this, as many apps within your farm. When an organization buys an app from the store or downloads it from free, like our one, you can use that in any site collection, any sub-site. It's not like you add the app and it's in one spot. We could have 1,000 team sites with that meeting instance app in it, and they're isolated. So from a security perspective, that's how you handle it. Now, from an architecture perspective, when you deploy the app, we're actually using an Azure web role, so every customer goes to the same web role, so it's multi-tenant, and we use a SQL web role, interestingly, only for diagnostic data. Why? We decided to store all of the meetings data inside SharePoint custom lists. And you'll understand why in a moment, because it does make the extensibility story very, very good from an end-user perspective. So we use provider-hosted, and the main reason we used provider-hosted was because we host our code in our own Azure web role, and we're writing in ASP.NET MVC 4, we can write in managed code, and therefore, essentially, we're compiling our DLLs and obfuscating them. If we'd have used a SharePoint-hosted approach, everything is client-side, and people would be able to see all of our code. We can minify JavaScript, but we decided that it was more secure for us from an IP protection perspective to store those things in that provider-hosted environment. I'll show you why we stored things inside SharePoint in the moment, and we do have for online and on-premises, but as I mentioned, you do need to generate two app packages to do that. So if I jump in and just show you this demo. Now, I'm going to be using a few tenants today because I found that one of my demos, interestingly, didn't work in this AvPoint US tenant. So I've switched over. Luckily, I have a backup tenant. And I'm working to find out exactly why that is the case. But we'll leave it at that for now. So what I'm going to do is just going to jump into site contents. This is where all the apps get deployed. So you can see here that they changed something in SharePoint. This concept of lists and libraries now, there is this addition of apps as well. So my document library is next to my app, my meetings app. And if I click on that app, it'll jump straight through there into my app. Now, while that's doing that, if I show you in the site contents here, you'll notice that it's provisioned a bunch of custom lists, some calendars, a folder for all my attachments, and for my actions. The main reason we did this was it meant that people could easily extend. So if a meeting had a concept of an agenda, we could actually write against the SharePoint object model and add agenda items directly in the SharePoint lists, giving them that flexibility. The other reason we did it was, if I go over to my name and about me, a really nice feature of SharePoint 2013 is my tasks. If I scroll over to here and go to tasks, excuse me, this leverages search. It goes and discovers all of the tasks assigned to me across all the site collections it's crawling. So as you can see, there's a little bit of test data in this environment, so I do apologize. But what you'll see is that we actually have two instances of meetings running. And I have an action in this meeting. I've got to heat up some marshmallows. I don't know what the context of that was, but I think I was at a show showing that somewhere. But I've also got some drinks and cerveza, because obviously I'm in Spain and that's what you do here, right? And so the idea is this gives me a roll-up of all of my actions. So I don't have to jump into my meetings app inside this team site and then jump into my meetings app in this other team site to see what actions I'm associated. So we're leveraging out-of-the-box platform capability of SharePoint, but we're still building our app outside in ASP.NET. So you can see here, if you look in my URL, that I'm running on avpointus.sharepoint.com. Whereas as soon as I come over to my meetings app, you'll notice that my URL has changed to meetings.avpoint.com. Again, this could be Ruby, it could be PHP, whatever you decide to choose to build it in. And then if I jump into one of these meetings here, and obviously you can do recurring meetings and you can do one-off meetings as well. The Wi-Fi here is causing this environment to be a little bit cold. But what you can do is I can add agendas, I can add actions, but all that data is being stored in its parent site. So every app has the capability to get permissions to write data back into its parent. So you can see here that it's kind of running up in here, and I can jump through this time frame and see what was done in every single meeting. And I'll leave it for you guys to explore that later on. But I just wanted to show you that, how that hooks together from that perspective. We also have things such as the search capability where we're leveraging the out-of-the-box search of SharePoint directly in this app. And that was a few lines of code to do that because now search is available in the client-side object model. So you can download that for free and have a play with that to get a good idea about how these apps string together. So the first question that comes up when we start talking about apps, typically when we think about organizations rather than kind of consumer apps, is security. When I deploy an app, the app has to ask what permissions it requires. And when the user adds the app, they get told this is what this app is going to do. And you either have to trust it or reject it. If you reject it, it won't install the app. It's either all or nothing. So when you're building apps, don't ask for everything if you don't need it. Only add the necessary permissions that your app requires, because especially if you're in the store, people are going to be very, very cautious if you're asking for tenant-wide security offerings for your app, when really all you're doing is reading a list in your parent site. But you are capable of doing all of those things in store apps, actually, except for that tenancy ability to push through. You can ask for, if I deploy the app within a subsite of a subsite of a subsite, you can ask for permissions of that whole parent site collection. But there is no way for a store app to say, I want to have access to every single site collection within my tenant. The only way you could do that is by side-loading the app into the app catalog. From a rights perspective, I can ask for read-only, so I can view my parent site data. Maybe I'm building a nice little app part that's going to visualize data I've got in the custom list, and I just want to add that to my page. I could ask for just read-only, or I could ask for write or manage within the store. If I'm deploying via the app catalog directly as a side load, I can actually ask for full control as well, which would allow me to a lot more using the client-side object model. These permission levels are not customizable. They're fixed, and you'll see that when you go into Visual Studio. The settings of the app rights are defined within the manifest, and I'll show you that in a moment inside Visual Studio. And once those rights are provisioned, you can't change them unless you submit a new package or upload a new package into the app catalog, and then have to do an upgrade between versions, which we'll talk about in a moment. So just to show you where that is, when you go into Visual Studio, and I'll come back and explain some of these solutions in more details in a moment, every single app package will have an app manifest in there. And you'll see on the settings for this that I can actually request exactly what I want. So I've been a little bit sneaky and lazy in this one, and I've asked for full control, just because I'm not concerned about security in the demos I'm showing you today. But you might want to get more granular and start suggesting that for that web level, that I could maybe do the read, write, manage, or full control. Again, these are baked in. You can't have custom permission levels like you could create in your full trust solutions. One of the things you'll notice when I did my demo with the Meetings app was this concept of my tenant, my SharePoint bits were running on avpointus.sharepoint.com. But my actual app, when I went in and jumped into the app itself, was running on meetings.avpoint.com. There's a good reason they've done that. And even in SharePoint-hosted ones, if you've played with it, you'll notice that it'll go avpointus- and it'll have a GUID.sharepoint.com. The main reason that Microsoft decided to do this from an architecture perspective is to protect from cross-domain scripting, because browsers will block the ability for some JavaScript running here on meetings.avpoint.com to call over to avpointus.sharepoint.com. But they knew that you needed to, because my Meetings app needs to reach into SharePoint and ask for the agenda items, the action items, the attachments. So what they provide is a mechanism to do that cross-domain capability. So what they've built inside here, and I will provide these demos on my blog, and this one is the first one I'll demonstrate. And I just need to comment out this code. I'm just going to click F5 on that and run that up. One of the nice things about app development is my laptop is just Windows 8. I have Visual Studio installed. I have the SharePoint tools installed. I don't have SharePoint installed. You don't need to be running on a SharePoint farm to build apps. As long as I've got a farm somewhere I can deploy to, and in this instance, I'm actually going to be deploying to Office 365, so my fingers are crossed for the cloud gods to be in my favor today, I don't need to be running SharePoint, which makes a big difference. So you don't necessarily have to be having virtual machines for every single individual if you choose not to. I'm just going to log in here. And so that's going to run up, and you'll see here that it's asking me, do I trust this app? It's going to let me, if I just zoom in there, let it read items in this site. Okay, well, that's not a problem. So if I click trust it, now it should go through there, and now that will run up my application. Now notice, this is a SharePoint hosted app, so I don't have any Azure components or any multi-tenanting components, but you'll notice that it doesn't just have avpointmyview.sharepoint.com. It's given me a unique identifier so that I can't do that callback without using this cross-domain model. Now, what you'll notice here is this is actually sitting on initializing. If you look at my code, just to demonstrate this, all I'm actually doing right now is trying to use Ajax to call my RSS feed on my blog. And obviously SharePoint, well, the browser, in fact, is actually blocking JavaScript from being able to call over to jeremythake.com and pull down that XML feed. But if I change some code up the top here, I'm just going to uncomment this one. The nice thing about the app model is I just modified that and click save. I don't have to F5 again. Visual Studio pumps those changes back up to Office 365 for you, which is pretty cool. It really speeds up your development experience. So if I simply refresh that web browser page now, I've got some debug hooks in here just to explain what's going on. Essentially, it's going to go and get that web request info and pull that down using the special proxy. And it's going to do that asynchronously. And if you haven't done too much JavaScript, essentially, this execute query sync is either going to call the success handler method or the error handler method, depending on whether the async works or not. I'm hoping I get some success, but I will just add a breakpoint here, just to F5, and hopefully we'll hit that back, and we did. And if I just continue on that, and go back to the page, you'll see it's rendered the JavaScript that was available for the blog articles that I've been writing recently on a separate domain. The way that it does that under the covers, other than that JavaScript code there, is when you come into your manifest properties, if I scroll that down, and we open up the app manifest, on the last page there, there's a remote endpoints. And I can put in that URL and declare, these are the URLs I wish to call out to remotely. And these are the ones we're going to trust. So this really helps. It helps with that plumbing aspect of if you want to reach out to things like that that wouldn't necessarily work in a normal scenario. But another thing I wanted to say is that the other very, very, very common one that people want to do is, by default, your app will only be able to reach to its it's app web. So with this app web, when you deploy that app, the app web, I can call whatever I want in that app web. But the parent site that it was deployed to, so in my instance, when I deploy AvPoint Meetings, all my lists are in that parent site. The app can't call to that content. So what you have to do is use another mechanism there to allow you to do that. And in my example here, the get documents in hosts, essentially, what I'm doing is I'm using the app context site and passing through my parent host web URL and calling the client-side object model. And this allows me now to, from my app, reach out to my parent site to grab those actions, those different things, and use them within my app. But you don't natively get that out of the box without using that code. You would get an error. Now, I've saved that. And if I just refresh that now, what that's actually doing is pulling documents that are available inside my parent site. So if I went to AvPoint MyView Sites Dev and had a look in my documents folder here, you would see those two documents. And if I went into site contents, you would see that's the app that's inside there, the app web that's in it. Now, the really nice bit, which is another little cool little tip, as well as being able to do that to the parent site, I can also leverage Office Web Apps, or WAPI as the internal code name that sometimes the code names creep through into production. If I click here, that'll actually allow me to, and actually I need to unregister some of those errors. You'll get a few JavaScript errors if you're in debug mode. That'll actually allow me to leverage Office Web Apps within my app. So you can see here that's automatically loaded up this presentation that I have stored inside my SharePoint site, but it's rendering it inside my app. So you can leverage a lot of the SharePoint stuff from there. And it works with lots of different document types as well. You can see there I have a very, very complicated Word document there with the word test in it. You can see I'm a developer and not a marketing person. But that allows me to do document previews within my app. And the way that we do that inside the code, if I scroll down a little bit, is in this code here, I'm essentially got an on-click event where I'm writing out those documents that are in that document library, and you'll see that I'm using the layouts 15 WAPI iframe.aspx and then passing some parameters to it, and that's how it's hosting that within my app, and SharePoint natively trusts that URL. So again, that's a very useful tip for that integration. So that's what we just covered there. The other nice thing about an app, which you've never been able to do in the past without hard coding or putting farm level agent kind of service level accounts inside config within your full trust solutions, is the app can act as itself. So if I deploy the AvPoint Meetings app into your site and you trust it, if I write a document or write an action into a SharePoint list, it won't be written as me. It won't be written as, you know, Jeremy created an action in the Meetings app. It would be the Meetings app has created an action in my parent site. So you can actually act on behalf of that user. So if I show that as an example, essentially what we have inside here in my other project is I have this app only page. And what that's going to do is have a text box and a button. And in the button click, what I'm doing is I'm actually using the client context, but I'm getting the client context as the app identity rather than getting the site content context as the user that's using the app. So as an example here, if I run this one up, and again, this is going to go to my other tenant because this one is only working in that tenant for now and not quite sure why. What that's going to do is allow me to write a list item to a SharePoint list in the parent site, but write it as that app name. And I'll just demonstrate that because it is very useful. Now, you notice the first time I F5, obviously it's going through the steps of uploading that package into that farm tenant. It's doing some clever stuff on the fly with client IDs. One thing, if you download my demo packages, is sometimes Visual Studio can actually hard code the client ID into the manifest. So what you need to double check, if I just open up the manifest, where's it gone? Oh, it's up the top. If I open up the manifest inside the XML editor rather than through the viewer, just make sure that the client ID is an asterisk rather than an individual GUID. That caused me 3 hours of pain a few days ago where it was some convoluted 402 error. And then someone from Microsoft was like, you just change that to an asterisk and it'll work again. I was like, thank you. So I owe him a success or two for sure. So I'm just going to log in to this environment just to show this demo. The other one that, and this is a funny one, so I blame my developers for changing the password on my account. When you see the SharePoint URLs, you'll always see avpointus.sharepoint.com or your tenantname.sharepoint.com. But when you go to log in, you don't use SharePoint, you use on Microsoft. The amount of times in my username I use .sharepoint.com and then sit there wondering, did I change my password? Am I forgetting my password? So on Microsoft.com for usernames, .sharepoint.com for SharePoint sites. You'll thank me later, I promise. When you get in here, again, it's going to ask me to trust it because it's the first time it's deployed. And if I maximize that there, the working on it, you'll all be sick of that if you're on 2007 and 2010 pretty quickly. I'm just going to jump over to this app-only call. I'll come back to this solution in more detail later. But I'm a big fan of Back to the Future and also of Back to the Future 2, and I'm going to submit that. Now, if I go over to my AvPointUS site, it's Jeremy Dev, which is the parent site, I created a list called Movies. If you download this demo, I was a little bit slack, and I didn't create the parent list as part of the ad app. So if you get an error, it'll say it can't find the Movies list. But if you create the list, the custom list, it'll work. So you'll see here, the Back to the Future 2 is there. But if I view the item and have a look there, I'm logged in as jeremy.fake, but it's actually recorded that list end item as the app itself. So from an auditing perspective, depending on which way you want to do this, you may want to enforce that the app acts as it hits in identity. Why? Well, if I switch on auditing, which you can't do in Office 365 yet, but if I switch it on in on-premises, I would be able to see exactly what my app is doing. If my app impersonates the user, my app could be going all over the place and doing what it likes. You wouldn't necessarily know it's the app doing that. So this is something you might want to enforce from a governance perspective, that you do use the app identity when you deploy apps, so you can see what the app's doing. So the code samples are in the PowerPoint deck, but they're also available in the code samples as well. So the other thing that becomes very tricky if you're in Office 365, or even as a developer, if your nasty admins won't let you get to the on-premises environments to look at the ULS logs, is how do I see or monitor my apps that are deployed in the environment? How do I debug what's going on? Well, we came up with a solution using SignalR, and we actually use SignalR in a few different ways. Unfortunately, Damien Edwards, who actually was a colleague of mine when I was in Australia, is actually at the Build conference right now. He's not at this conference. But there are some really good SignalR sessions, both at Build, Tech Ed North America, and I believe there are some here, but Damien's not doing them himself. The concept of SignalR originally was more around a game engine where essentially you could have sockets that your web page could be monitoring, and if there was a change, it would immediately happen on your web browser. And in the demo that they use, it's like this asteroids game with a spaceship, and you know they had like 3,000 people on the web page on their Surface devices at Build last year killing each other. It's very pleasant. But we didn't want to use it for gaming. In the meetings app that you saw where we were creating agenda items and actions, you guys could all be sitting here on your surfaces using the meetings app, and if I added an action saying that I have to buy beers for everyone in this session, that would instantly come up on all of your devices on your browser, which is very, very cool with very little plumbing. The packages are available in NuGet to fetch, which I'll show you where to get those in a moment. So we use that in the meetings app, but we also use it in our diagnostic logging, and I'll show you why we do that. What it allows me to do, and this was part of that same package that I deployed, is if I go back a page just quickly, you'll notice when I run that up, or maybe not, it was a little bit quick, that I actually had this other window jump as well as my SharePoint page, where essentially whatever I do in here, Back to the Future 3 was terrible, but I'll add it anyway. What'll happen is in my diagnostic logging, if the demo gods are on my side, there you go, it'll actually automatically have a refresh where I'm posting to a diagnostic log, but push up to my web browser there. So in my production environment, I can see all of the logs and exceptions that are happening in my app without asking for access to the ULS logs, which you can't even get at in Office 365, or maybe trying to write to the SharePoint listen libraries and doing it that way. So this is a very useful way of doing diagnostics within applications. And it's very, very simple to hook together. And I will say that I didn't write this project. Chris Johnson, who used to work on the SharePoint product team, who's based in Seattle, actually presented this session in North America, and we flipped coins to present this one in Madrid, and he lost, clearly. What you have to do is add some NuGet packages. Is everyone familiar with NuGet? Or Nugget, or depending on, okay. So SharePoint developers traditionally aren't, but now you're in this big fancy world of being able to write ASP.NET MVC against apps, it's definitely something you can get involved in. Essentially what it allows me to do, if I stop the debugging on this, is I can go in and add those packages by manage NuGet packages. And you'll see, because I've already pulled these down, that they will actually select which ones the signal are that have been added. So what it does is it will pull down from a source repository exactly the components and squirt them into my solution. It adds the DLL references. It deploys the necessary JavaScript files, the image files. Whereas remember in the past, you know, you'd get a package, you'd have to extract it, and then you have to include everything in the project. This does all that for you. And it also handles that concept of an update. So to find the SignalR stuff, if you look down here, you have to click on online, and if I type in SignalR, you should see that those have pulled through. And we can actually just very easily click and install those components directly into my Visual Studio package. Then all we had to do on the monitoring page is we had to add a few quick references based on the fact that SignalR has essentially dropped some JavaScript files in various folders within my Visual Studio project. And then we just instantiate an instance of that debug monitor, and it'll automatically refresh based on the source that you bind it to. So if another app writes to that same hub that this is running, the hub monitor will list those log items coming through. So it's very useful. And if I had more time, I'd jump deeper into the code. But I'll quickly show you from the some other page aspect. In the client-side code here, you'll see that we've got some managed code here where that some other page is where we were adding the Back to the Future thing. Essentially, we're writing to that log in that Tracecaster. And if I jump into that Tracecaster, which is also managed code, you can see that I can add these messages here like that. And that this context allows me to just grab that hub. So this is using out-of-the-box signal mechanisms to provide an ability to have this kind of communication socket that I can write to in real time, and that I can monitor directly within a web browser without having to access log files or the ULS file. This is extremely useful for SharePoint Online and extremely scalable as well. So again, these code samples will be available for you guys to grab too. Now, the other thing I mentioned was about user interface. From a user interface perspective, we're all very used to building web parts where if I have a master page on my my site, some cool branding, some colors, you know, the old favorite don't make it look like SharePoint routine where it, you know, you bend it so far, and then you add a web part to it and it takes on all that branding. With the apps, because I'm clicking into the app and jumping over to meetings.avpoint.com or, you know, task and calendar sync.avpoint.com, that branding isn't there because you can't inherit the master page because you're executing on a completely different web role and a completely different thread. But Microsoft have given you the ability to leverage this Chrome control, which gives you the idea of your text going from the one on the left to the one on the right. So with that example, the first app, it's going to just show you what this experience looks like if I just F5 a vanilla. So these projects, this was literally a file new project, SharePoint hosted app, and this was actually in a SharePoint hosted app itself. You do get used to typing in these passwords with these Office 365 demos. And essentially what that will do is deploy that package and it will show me that ASP.NET page, and I'll just show you the contents. It's very, very simple. And we've hooked in a few class libraries. So you can see there that I am using CSS class names that Microsoft give you a nice big list on MSDN so you can make it look and feel a bit more like SharePoint. Now, when I run this up and have a look in my browser, too many windows open now. Is it still going? There you go. When I run this up in my browser, what you'll actually see under the covers is that it's going to look very, very vanilla. So although, yes, I'm going to trust my app, although when I trust it and I jump into my app, the branding's not there. So as an experience, as an end user, that's not great. That isn't a great experience. Well, what happened there? I was in SharePoint, all of a sudden, I'm not. So what Microsoft have provided is what they call a Chrome control. And if you scroll up the top here, the document ready function within JavaScript essentially allows me to grab the host URL and grab that default CSS file and load that in using the get script and push through some JavaScript as well. So if I save that now and refresh that page, again, I'm not deploying again, you'll notice that the Chrome has now changed. Now, there is one kind of drawback, and this is a provider-hosted app. So you notice that I was on avpointus.sharepoint.com. I've clicked into the app. I've now gone, because I'm debugging locally, to localhost colon 44301 blah. So I'm completely off of SharePoint. But you'll see that it's got that top bar. But what's missing on that top bar if you've been familiar with SharePoint 2013? What immediately screams there? Anyone? Right, so I can't see my name. I can't jump to my My Site from here. I can't jump to Outlook, my calendar, my sites. All of that branding is gone. That only happens in provider-hosted and auto-hosted apps. If you look at a SharePoint-hosted app, you'll get more than just the back-to-site button. You'll actually, in fact, you see, we get all this Chrome back now because we're inside SharePoint. In a SharePoint hosted app, you still maintain that branding. So that is one trade-off of jumping to provider hosted. Now, what we've done in our apps is cheated a little bit. We actually build that ourselves. We build the Outlook, the calendar, the sites, because we know what the host URL is, so we know how to build the URLs out. Still haven't got an answer from Microsoft on why that is the case, but that's a way of working around that. So it feels more like SharePoint. But it's still very, very hard to get these kind of things in here as well. No clue on when they might invest in some additional things there, but that's just something to bear in mind when you're making a decision about SharePoint hosted by a provider. Providers obviously going to give that flexibility. I can write in any language. I can write managed code. SharePoint hosted is going to be client-side only, but a little bit better look and feel and understanding of integrating with SharePoint UI. In some cases, people are actually got to the point where they're sticking with sandbox solutions or full trust solutions because of that user interface integration. The next thing that is of concern, and this is something that very, very recently, as in yesterday, we updated our Meetings app to version 2. We added some search capability, we added some roll call capability to log who was present in the meeting, and some print views and different bits and pieces. When you do that, in a full trust solution, a lot of people weren't aware, but you could actually version features. When you created the feature in SharePoint inside Visual Studio, if you clicked on the feature, in the properties window, you could increment the feature number and do certain amount of additional things so that when I deployed the first solution package and it was version 1, and then if I deployed another solution package, which was version 2, which maybe added an extra document library to my site on activation to a net new site, it would do that. But the problem is if the feature's already activated and you deploy a new solution package, it's not going to add that document library to any instance of the site where it's activated already. And that's by design with SharePoint. Now, in SharePoint 2010 and above, there's this concept of a PowerShell push or an API push to upgrade and say, okay, you activated this feature when it was version 1, but version 4 of this feature is out now, so I'm going to force you to update. Now, unfortunately, SharePoint isn't intelligent enough to go, well, actually, the difference between a version 1 feature and a version 4 feature is this document library, and so create it. You actually have to declaratively say exactly what the differences are between version 1 and version 2, version 2 and version 3, and version 3 and version 4, which can get a little bit painstaking to have to remember, okay, well, if someone's on 2 and they jump into 4, they need a document library and they're going to add this content type that I've created that wasn't in version 2. So the versioning and feature versioning has been available, but it wasn't widely used. Why? Because a lot of developers just use the approach of retract it, remove it, add it, deploy it, and they would do the activate, deactivate feature to basically force it to run and fudge adding the documents and stuff. But in a lot of cases, deactivating features and reactivating cause a lot of problems. So Microsoft are really pushing that we carry on using this declarative way of jumping from official versions to official versions. With full trust solutions, there was no concept of a solution package version. You could only version features. In app packages, you have versions. So inside my Visual Studio projects, when you look at the manifest and double-click on it, on the first page here, by default, you'll get version 1.0.0.0. If you make a change to your app and you want to resubmit a new edition of the app to the store, or if you change it and you want to deploy it via the app catalog, you have to manually increment that number. But what's really cool now is that that is understood by the features under the covers as well. And why is this a big deal? Well, take the scenarios earlier on where we talked about this concept of me having app 3 in 2 locations within my environment. If I push this in here for app 2, that's to version 1. But my app could be version 2, so I need to understand what versions of my remote stuffs is running compared to what's actually running in my host. Now, this makes more sense in this example, where if you look at app 3 there in the subsite, I might upgrade that to 1.1. But if I click on the app in either the root site or the subsite, they're both going to jump to this Windows Server app 3 web v1. So my multi-tenant web role, my SQL role, my Windows service actually needs to understand V1, but it also needs to understand that if my app is still, understand V1.1, but it also needs to understand that there may be some apps that are 1.0 out there. So for instance, even though Meetings is now version 2 in the store, it doesn't automatically go and update all the apps inside every tenant. Now, interestingly, in Windows 8.1, who stayed up last night to download that, they automatically update apps for you now. SharePoint doesn't. So the admins or the site owners see that the app has a new release and they have to choose to upgrade. So in a multi-tenant environment, you would have to understand that different versions of the app will be calling into you. And that gets complicated. Not right now for us, we've got 2 versions out there, but in 10 versions time, we're going to have to start thinking about forcing people to upgrade to use our app. Now, the way they upgrade is a little bit interesting. When we deploy version 1, obviously, that gets provisioned as an app web. But if version 1.0.1, and you can do whatever numbering you like here, it'll make that notification available in the site contents. And what it does is, if you choose to upgrade, it creates a copy of the app web, and it tries to upgrade it to that new version. You've got a version mismatch there, but apologies. If that trial of the upgrade works, it then upgrades the actual real app web and deletes the trial. So that's how the upgrades work. Now imagine if you had a lot of the data in that app web, or maybe it worked in a trial, but it broke when it did the real upgrade. There's a little bit of transactional concern there. So that was one of the decisions why we made that our meetings data is actually outside of the app web. Because copying an app web where we had a lot of meetings data in there will be very, very tricky. And also it's easier for our customers to access the data if it's in the parent site rather than data being in the app web itself. That was the reason we did that. So from a code perspective, this is how you declaratively state what you do between different versions. So you can say here that, well, the feature is now up to version 1.003, but if my version was 1.001, those are the element manifest files I need to run when I do the upgrade command. And if my version was 1.002, then I need another elements file there. So that's how you do the incremental declaration of that. Now, the key here is you have to specify this. SharePoint can't automatically work that out. Something you should consider definitely up front, because this does become very complex if you're not careful. Now, I'll quickly go through this one. I won't do a demo of this because I really want to see whether you guys have any questions. One other thing that you have to bear in mind, and there is a typo on that slide, which it shouldn't say client ID. I will correct that. When you jump into an app, if I come into this app here, in site contents, you'll see if I hover down there that the URL is not to meetings.avpoint.com. It's actually, in fact, to avpointus.sharepoint.com. But if you notice, it's going to something in the layouts directory called app redirect with an instance ID. That instance ID is the unique identifier for that app web within that site. Here's one of the tricky things that kind of catches people out with provider-hosted apps. When I jump in here, you'll see that that will change from the app redirect to avpointus.sharepoint.com over to meetings.avpoint.com. And again, I think the Wi-Fi is deciding to play nice-ish. And what happens during that that spin, that redirection there, is that it's actually posting variables inside the HTTP headers, which then our app reads. Thank you. Well, at least one of these demos had to break, right? And the idea being, I'm just going to try the other tenant because I do want to demonstrate this. Let's try AvPoint MyV. Just signing in the account. And the idea being is, and this has been a common thing that's kind of caught out our customers. Okay, let's use Chrome. It's caught out our customers is that once you're in meetings.avpoint.com, once I'm in meetings.afpoint.com, people want to have this habit that they want to try and share the URL. And you'll see why in a moment. And the problem is with that, is that that URL actually expires. Because when it posts in and redirects, it uses an OAuth token that lasts for 20 minutes. So in our example, if we create a meeting and we want to send an email saying this meeting is going to happen on Tuesday, and in the body of the email, the meeting invite, we want to provide a link so they can click straight into the meetings app, straight into that instance of the meeting. That link, if we used copy and paste from the browser, would actually expire after 20 minutes. So what you'll notice is when you click on these apps, and there's definitely something up right now, is that you'll see it jumped. But if you copy and paste that URL, and I open up Notepad, just zoom in there, you can actually grab that URL. That URL is unique. And that will work no matter what. If they aren't authenticated, and you give that to someone, it'll ask them for user authentication first, and then once their user is authenticated, it jumps into the app. But what's really nice is, with some variables, what I can actually do, if I jump into my project, is I can come in, and you'll notice down here, there is this thing called the query string. And you can see there that I've only got the standard tokens in here. But if I wanted to pass through ampersand meeting ID equals 400, when it authenticates, it jumps into my meetings app, passes that meeting ID, and would automatically load that particular meeting instance rather than going to the home page of my meeting app. So you can get very clever with the how you jump through and auth at the same time. That isn't well documented on MSDN right now, so I'm hoping that that tip will save some of you guys when you start looking at those apps. Now, from an OAuth perspective, I just wanted to kind of cover this. What essentially happens is when an app, an auto-hosted app gets created, it's actually going to give that external web role and SQL role and worker role, if you're provider-hosted, an OAuth token. That's the OAuth token that's used to call back into SharePoint using the client-side object model. But if I then deploy another app, say provider-hosted, in AvPoint Meetings as an example, but I deploy it to two locations, in the sub-site as well as in the root site, those OAuth tokens are different because the OAuth tokens are basically unique to the user and the app instance. Now, for us, not necessarily with AvPoint Meetings because we do everything live on the screen, but if my timer job wakes up, it needs to use the OAuth token. So we need to store those somewhere. But those user tokens actually expire after 20 minutes. So what you also get when you jump into an app, what it passes you as part of the app redirect is a refresh token. The refresh token can be used to update your OAuth token. Now, unfortunately, there is no code or frameworks out of the box or guidance yet on how you should store those and the mechanisms for refreshing them. So we've built it ourselves. I am trying to pull all the bits out and produce that on Coplex. So if there's something you're looking at, please feel free to ping me. But remember, OAuth only happens in SharePoint Online. In a high-trust S2S provider-hosted app on-premises, essentially what it is the app package stores a secret, and the web role has a secret in the web config, and when the app is clicked on, the app tells the web role the secret that's stored in the web config, and if they match, then SharePoint trusts it. It's a little bit different from the OAuth, and it's a little bit of PowerShell you run to generate the secret on your SharePoint farm, and then you have to register it as well. So please bear that in mind, there is very different authentication between on-premises and online. So hopefully you found those tips useful. Hopefully as solution developers, you found that useful. Again, my details are up there. Please feel free to follow me on Twitter or email me afterwards any questions. But did anyone have any questions now? Has anyone got any burning things? Yep. The app identity is essentially SharePoint is aware for the instance of that app. It gets a unique identifier. So much like if I log in to SharePoint via an authentication provider, when the app is added to the instance, that's how it's doing it. That's how it's kind of it's unique to the ID of that individual app that's deployed. It does. So when you click trust, the question was, does it have any rights? When you click trust, when you add the app, in your manifest, you'll actually decide or declare what you want the app to be able to do. So in a lot of instances, they won't. They'll just not declare it. But if you declare my app as me needs to have full control, you can do that in your app manifest. And when they click trust, they're granting that app the ability to do the full control. While you're all sitting there listening, please, please, please grab your phones out and scan this QR code. I would love feedback from you guys on my session. This is the first time I've presented this session. Me and Chris have been working this for a while. So I'm hoping that we have reached our goal of kind of adding to the vanilla stuff that Microsoft are giving you around the app packages. So if you haven't got a camera phone, why not? But maybe you haven't got internet in here. But please, please, please take a photo of that, fill in the survey, or log on to, do they still call it ComNet? Log on to ComNet out there on the little miniature Samsung devices. Me and Chris spent a lot of time building this session. I would really appreciate it if you could spend 3 minutes just submitting and rating, because it gives us good evaluation codes and obviously hopes that we'll be invited back based on our feedback. So if that's one thing I could ask of you guys in return for my help today, if you could just make sure you fill out those evals, it'd be great. Any other questions? No? Oh, sorry, yeah.
Okay. Yes, the deployment is kind of, so you will host the app content from your website. So let's say that you get a lot of customers for your app. Then that website might get a lot of traffic, maybe
correct,
uncontrollable amounts of traffic.
I guess the question was, in the sense that in this area where I'm running an app that's provider hosted and it's multi-tenant, like meetings.avpoint.com, as we get more customers downloading our free app, that web role is going to get hammered because we have all these different tenants on it. So that's why we host it in the cloud. At the moment, interestingly, because a lot of the logic is actually run in the browser and it's talking back client-side object model stuff, the compute cost is not that high. And we've only got two cores running that whole web role, and we've got a significant amount of tenants using the app already. But yes, it is a concern, and that's why when I animated out the previous slide, that you don't have to run it in Azure. If you're an on-premises customer, your provider-hosted web role could be an IIS. And in fact, for our own intranet, we deploy our Meetings app as an on-premises edition. And what that means is when I click on it, it doesn't go off to Azure to run the web role. We're running it in an IIS web role instead. So you can decide where you want to put this depending on the scalability. Obviously, Azure is going to give you a lot more scalability and obviously high availability as well, which was a lot of the reason they built the app model, was to try and make sure that if I build a solution and SharePoint's overwhelmed, it's not impacting my application. That's a good question. Did anyone else have any questions? Okay, well, oh, yeah. So the question was, how am I in my multi-tenant web role and SQL role, and in this instance, for Task and Calendar, we have the Windows role. It's a good question. How are we doing that? So what happens is when a user clicks on the app and it jumps over to meetings.avpoint.com or Task and Calendar.avpoint.com, in the meeting instance, we're not storing any data in those roles at all. The diagnostic logging is completely anonymous, and obviously we have a privacy document that explains all that from a legal aspect. Because we're storing all the data inside SharePoint, we don't really have the concern of multi-tenancy of the data. With Task and Calendar Sync, we have some sign-up information because we do actually have to store some encrypted credentials. So what we do with Task and Calendar Sync is, in SQL where we store all that information, we're actually using schemas. So we have one SQL instance, and for every tenant, we have a schema. So it's basically a duplicate. And that gives us that isolation of data apart from that perspective. That's a good question. Yep. Did anyone else have any? Okay. Well, I appreciate you guys staying till the end. Please, again, please fill out those reviews. Hopefully you give me good marks. Enjoy the rest of the conference. And I'll actually be at the booth this afternoon and tomorrow. I do have another session tomorrow. If you guys are doing any mobile dev, I'm doing a session on Windows Phone development with SharePoint 2013. Some pretty cool demos, and it really does highlight the power of Windows Phone 8 and SharePoint 2013 together. So if you are interested in that, your company is looking to adopt Windows Phone as a standard, which I'm hearing more and more recently, please come to that session. It's 3:15 tomorrow. So thank you again for your time, and enjoy the rest of the conference.